And now, Vax's View from the Couch, brought to you by Rocky's Ace Hardware, Outdoor Power Headquarters, Steel, Ego, and Craftsman, Rocky's Outdoor Power Trifecta.
Hey, good morning, sports fans. How the heck are you? Hey, call me an alarmist, but if the governor of Massachusetts suddenly reversed everything he's ever said about COVID-19 and suddenly allowed the Patriots to put 14,000 fans into the seats at Gillette Stadium, there would be plenty of you who would pack up your masks and coolers and start tailgating before lunch. I, on the other hand, would be not one of those people. I instead would continue to watch from afar in a fully compliant living room. But there would certainly be many of you who would see that gesture by the state as an invitation to flaunt all of that reasonable judgment and toss caution to the wind. This week, the state of California has announced that they will allow fans to return to outdoor football stadiums in three separate counties with the lowest infection rates. These counties include San Francisco, Alameda, and Santa Clara counties. Under the new state guidelines, the San Francisco 49ers, for example, could allow as many as 14,000 fans into Levi's Stadium for the next home game, which in this case would happen to be November 5th against the Green Bay Packers. However, because of many health officials still insisting that this is a tremendously horrible idea by the state of California, the 49ers are claiming that they are not prepared to welcome back 14,000 fans to Levi's Stadium, and so, for the time being, they will continue to play with nobody there. Folks, a football stadium, even in the best-case scenario, is still a living petri dish of potential disease in which the outdoors is still no guarantee against potential infection. You know what is a guarantee against potential infection? Staying home and not being seduced by the idea of sitting in a stadium with 13,999 other people. If I can't have more than 10 people in my house, I'm certainly not going to feel any safer in a public restroom with 50 other people looking to use a toilet. And yet, the state of California would like everybody to attend as many super spreader events as possible because, with COVID cases surging around the country, what could possibly go wrong in a football stadium? Thanks, but no thanks. But hey, enough of my yapping. Sports brought to you by Rocky's Ace Hardware, the farmer, the home builder, the machine shop foreman. What do they have in common? Carhartt, durable workwear that works as hard as you do. Rocky's introduces Carhartt workwear to their stores in Agawam, Westfield, Palmer, at East Long Meadow, at all their Rocky's Ace Hardware locations. I'm back. That's my View from the Couch. It's 7:10 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.
The fog will burn off, but not because of sun. In fact, it will stay cloudy today, but dry, mild, high in the upper 60s to near 70. It's 60 right now in downtown Springfield.
Tomorrow on the show, Jeff Plate from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra will be talking to us. They're planning a virtual event in lieu of actually touring around the country and making millions of dollars every year. This is what it's been relegated to.
As someone who's gone to see them at least for the last 10 years in a row, this will be unusual, but still could be interesting to hear how it's going to be played out. You know, if you watch any of the news these days, you're constantly seeing stories about mental health issues regarding the COVID and the effects that it's having, not just on adults, but also on the children. Story last night on NBC, this one kind of blew me away, says more than half of kids between 11 and 17 have had thoughts of suicide or self-harm. More than half.
Yep.
That's amazing. There is the Mental Health America is an organization that has a website that also has tools on its website that you can go to get help with certain mental health issues. They've had a 634% increase in people going to that site for help for anxiety, and an 873% increase for people going there for depression.
That shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. I mean, when you think of a kid, you know, being, you know, isolated from their friends and, you know, not being able to be in school to be with their friends or whatever, plus you add that to the kind of attention that is necessary to perform schoolwork at that level, with that intensity, online all the time, it adds to a lot of anxiety for kids. And I don't think people, you know, quite understand that. But, you know, kids are not designed to be completely focused on one thing for too long. That's why there's recess. That's why there's you have them out in athletic activities. You know, the kids need to burn off that energy physically and socially. And now they don't have that opportunity, or at least not quite in the same way.
And now you add another thing to the mental health issue for particularly those of us in the Northeast or anywhere in the Midwest for that matter. As Americans brace for a winter marked by COVID, social distancing, and the usual cold weather, the health experts are cautioning that the seasonal depression that would be setting in for many people, me included, is about to get worse. Those who have seasonal affective disorder, as temperatures start dropping and sunlight begins to wane, people might have less incentive to get out of the house. That presents a challenge for the roughly 5% of Americans that deal with seasonal depression. It's a depression characterized by the changing of seasons linked to a biochemical imbalance in the brain brought on by less sunlight, most commonly beginning in the fall and lasting through the winter. Actually more common in women and young adults who live further from the equator.
I'm surprised to hear it's only 5%.
I actually was a little shocked that it was that low, too. There's less activity, less socialization, less mastery activities, less pleasurable activities. So in general, there's an increase in depression, not to mention job losses and the loss of people. A lack of physical mobility compounded by the stress and unpredictability of the pandemic looks like it will make the final months of 2020 a little bit worse.
I think what you're going to find is, you know, because, you know, there are so many people, you know, at home and sheltered, that 5% that you're talking about is going to increase pretty dramatically. Like, for example, you know, people who would not typically have seasonal affective issues will have them this year because of a lack of activity. Like, activity is not, you know, physical activity is not part of what they're doing now because everyone's home and, you know, trying to work and they're not getting out and doing the things that they would normally do. And so all of a sudden, what would normally be, you know, activities that might be able to distract you in a way where you would not be affected by seasonal affective disorder, now it's something that people are going to be more concerned about.
And that's why they talk more now about, you know, exercising, trying to exercise inside your house, and what else did they have here? Several more months of video chats and phone calls, maintaining a strong support system with your friends, your family, or your spouse can be a key coping tool. Yeah, see, if you're not getting divorced because of the COVID, maybe then it's a key coping tool. But I got to believe that people that are now going to be cooped up inside the house because winter is rolling around and you have no actual outdoor activities to keep your time, you're going to see a lot of marriages falling apart. Another treatment option is light therapy. You know, I used to have one of those. It's a machine that mimics sunlight in an indoor setting like an office or a bedroom. Yeah, I used to have that. I don't really remember that it worked that great.
I think it totally depends on the individual, because I know people who also use the light box, and it does change things for them. But it's also a matter of discipline, like anything else. Like, you have to use it, I think it's like 30 minutes a day, sometimes 30 minutes a day, twice a day, depending on, you know, the level of depression that you're suffering from it. But it, like anything else, it's a discipline to be using it and not say, it's not working, I'm not going to use it.
Actually, somebody pointed out to me, and this does make sense, talking about that 5% of people who might have seasonal affective disorder, that's 5% who are diagnosed. You know, there's probably many, many more people out there who have it and just haven't had it. Like, I haven't had it officially diagnosed, but I know I've got it because every fall I start getting this way. I can't stand the winter.
Right. But, you know,
and ipso facto, it almost seems like I take it out on the fall.
But that's also true of all depression. Like, there are many people that have it that don't really identify it as problematic, you know, clinically diagnosable depression, but then deal with it by not dealing with it. You know, they're not being medicated. They're not going to see a therapist. They're not, you know, changing their diet or increasing their activity. All the things that, you know, would increase endorphin activity, which might change their coping mechanisms. I mean, then there's a lot of people that don't do it. So any time you see a statistic about, you know, mental health, a lot of it is like a speculative number. There's no hard numbers about how many people are suffering from depression. But considering everything that's gone into the last, you know, several months, would it be any wonder why this winter people would be hit particularly hard? I mean, when you think about it in this way, we're very, very lucky that this thing didn't start during the wintertime. Like, it didn't really kick in here in the United States until, you know, February, March. Thank God it didn't start like around December 1st. When we would have had to go through the entire winter trying to figure out how to shelter in place.
Well, but that's what we're about to do.
Well, that's, but we're already.
So does having 9 months of pre-experience make it easier?
Well, think back. I mean, it at least you now know how to manage your time and manage your life to a certain extent now that you didn't have back in March or even April when we weren't even sure. You know, what was coming up, we thought this thing would last. Oh, it would be done by June or July. You know, at least we're now more prepared for dealing with some of this stuff than we were last year. I'm just saying that, you know, that thank God this didn't start the first time around in the winter, because I don't know how many people would have been prepared to handle it even then.
But when you say prepared, the problem now is, see, at least back in February and March of last year, many, many more people bought into the idea that this is a bad thing that we need to protect ourselves from. Now, 9 months later, there's a hell of a lot more people out there who are the, let's not shut down the economy, let's not overreact, this is no worse than the flu.
Oh, I know.
This is going to go away overnight like a miracle.
And a lot of that is due to the fatigue of it all. And I get that. But I think when a second wave really starts to show itself, and it's already beginning in some areas, then, you know, it's going to be harder and harder to deny the importance of being compliant, at least for the, you know, for the duration. But back in March, who would have thought we'd still be dealing with this as we are in October? Well, I mean, you know, you heard speculation that if a second wave happens, it's going to happen in the fall.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, was anybody really thinking that was going to happen for sure at the time? I don't think anyone was 100% convinced at the time.
And then how do you start parsing out, how do you start separating down the depression in this country of the people who have seasonal affective disorder versus the people who are afraid of COVID and catching the virus or someone in their family catching the virus versus the people who are having legitimate mental health issues over concerns about the upcoming election?
Well,
we got three major things all happening at the same time. It seems like it would be difficult for the mental health community to be able to figure out who's got what. Not that it doesn't.
Well,
I think it does matter.
I think it does matter, but I think, you know, if you're a therapist and you're looking at this, you can look at it in two ways. You're either looking at this being a situational depression or a biological chemical depression. And there are ways of treating both kinds of depression, sometimes in similar ways, but oftentimes not in similar ways. You know, in a situational depression, you know, some things have got to change in order for you to start feeling better. But the brain, you know, works in pretty odd ways. And sometimes, you know, chemically speaking, you're just, you know, your hormones are spitting out, things that it doesn't need, or too much of one thing or not enough of another. So, and that's why, you know, there are certain medications that are extremely helpful for some people and not so much for others. A lot of it depends on what kind of situation are you really talking about.
I still find that more than half of the 11 to 17 year olds. Now, pay attention to what the words are here. Thought of suicide. You know, there's a difference between ideation and action. I mean, lots of people think about suicide without ever taking a first step towards actually committing it. But these are clearly, you know, based on a website that has some kind of a tool within it that kids can go to, based on the usage and the information provided by these kids who've gone on this website, that's how they've been able to come up with that statistic.
Right.
Not because this is the number of 11 to 17-year-olds who've actually gone to their parents or told their teachers or went to a doctor.
Well, again,
they simply went onto a website and filled out a tool.
But that's why, you know, citing statistics about, you know, psychological disorders or depression or whatever it may be is really tricky because, one, you have to be diagnosed. Two, you have to be willing to get a diagnosis as someone who's suffering. There's a lot of things that need to go into it. And not and a lot of people deal with their mental illness in silence and by themselves and don't address a path to recovery. So, those are the things you got to consider. And the fact of the matter is most depression is at least treatable. It may not be curable for everybody, but it's treatable. And there's a lot of people out there that deal with this, don't even identify it as depression. They just feel sad or moody or whatever it may be, but it's depression. They just may not see it that way. And we need to start looking at that and start, you know, being honest with ourselves. You know, do we want to feel better? Can we feel better? And are we willing to do the things that are necessary to feel better?
I'm just glad that a week away from Halloween, we're going to have a 74-degree day. However, that's not going to make up for the 30-degree Easter of next spring. I promise you that.
It's 724 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102. It's 726 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102. If you've missed any part of today's show or a previous Bax and O'Brien show and you say, the show ends at 10, I really feel like I want more Bax and O'Brien in my day, you go to BaxandO'Brien.com and you subscribe to the Daily Podcast. It's very simple. You can also do it through Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you would find podcasts. And you can follow along without missing another show. And also check out Baxy's musical podcast. This week, another look into Baxy's enormous record collection with an album by the Heartbreakers, LAMF, from 1977. A really good album. We'll talk about that. And I got some good stuff coming up in the next few weeks. Again, it's all available. Bax and O'Brien podcast on BaxandO'Brien.com.
You know, I get the celebratory high five is something we're supposed to be avoiding right now. I was just watching on the Today Show, they were showing a clip from game one of the World Series last night. And clearly a guy got a home run. And then he's being congratulated by his teammates as he comes back home. And all of his teammates are standing outside of the dugout. First of all, not socially distanced, obviously.
Sure.
But they're tapping feet together. Yeah. And it looks like a really bad, not that I've ever seen a really good river dance, but it looks like a really bad river dance where they're all, you know, trying to, they're moving their bodies in celebration and then trying to tap feet at the same time.
Yeah, we've transformed it to the World Series into Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
No,
I prefer the fist bump. I just find that to be easier and far more subtle.
What are you going to do when this World Series is over? Somebody wins it. Let's say it's the Dodgers, for example, and Mookie Betts makes the final out of the game. You know, in every other World Series, there's this big giant pig pile of players, usually on the pitcher's mound or wherever. Yeah, that ain't gonna happen. What are they gonna do? What are they gonna do? Stand in place and jump up and down? It's just not gonna feel right.
By the way, I noticed Sunday watching football that the referees who are masked are using whistles. I remember talking about this before the football season started. They had a product that they showed, an electronic whistle that would be handheld and have, I don't know if it was a system set up through the stadium or if it was a speaker on the referee's belt,
right,
and that they would be using this handheld button-pushed whistle. But what I saw Sunday, they were, I don't know how they were pulling the masks down and blowing the whistle so fast, you know, to end plays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they're still doing it that way.
I don't know. I mean, but, you know, pulling the mask down, blowing a whistle, it's not a real time-consuming
Well, thing. But when you're running, you know, they're running along with the end of the play and blowing the whistle, it could take a little coordination there.
They're all athletic, so they probably have good eye-hand coordination, good hand-to-whistle
whistle technique. To running coordination?
I listen, like you, I would have a hard time running and blowing a whistle at the same time. But that's why
I have a hard time standing still blowing a whistle.
Right. That's why no one's ever asked me to officiate like a soccer game. Yeah. Really. I mean,
or a billiards game.
I wouldn't officiate.
I'm just standing there.
I wouldn't officiate anything if I had to.
Yeah.
I would find ways of getting out of it.
I mean, you would think they still just would not be blowing air into this thing. I mean, obviously, they're not blowing it into the face of anybody else, but nevertheless.
It's 7:30. We have news next on Rock 102.
GG.
It's 7:31 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102. It's time for news, and it's brought to you by Sarat Ford, celebrating their 91st anniversary on the same corner in Agawam. Here's local radio icon and first responder Steve Nagel.
Benvenidos, Quarantinos.
Muchos gracias, Premier Respondedor.
Sí, señor.
A woman was seriously hurt late Tuesday afternoon after a big dog attacked her several times in Enfield, Connecticut, causing an on-duty officer to kill it, according to police. The Enfield Police Department said the officer was responding to a call on Spring Street around 4:30 p.m. when the officer saw the dog, described as a large pit bull, attack the woman nearby. Immediately, the officer approached the injured woman, while the dog was still biting her foot, and noticed, quote, severe lacerations and tissue damage to the woman's foot. The dog's owners were in the area and were able to briefly stop the pit bull from further attacking the woman by pouring hot water on it. Police say the dog then lunged at the woman's neck area, bit her, and began to pull her back into the front yard of the property from the sidewalk. To avoid any further injuries to the woman, Enfield police said the officer, quote, dispatched the dog, unquote.
I don't know how the owners were able to. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of details here we don't know. We don't know how far from home this dog was when it attacked, mm-hmm. whether it was a neighbor. How the owners were able to get hot water. I mean, in the middle of a dog attack, you're gonna run home, put a pot of water on the stove, wait for it to come to a boil, or just turn on the even turning on the sink and waiting for the water to get hot enough.
Maybe they were carrying around a travel mug with hot tea in it or something like that.
Maybe, but it's still. Sounds a little. There's a lot of detail missing, and it brings a lot of questions.
Yeah, there could be any number of things, and we probably shouldn't speculate on what happened.
But then the officer apparently sent the dog to another call.
No, I don't know.
But
if
the officer was dispatched to the scene, and then he dispatched the dog.
I think it might be a different. Dispatching.
I believe he killed the dog. I think that's what that means.
Well, then there were two dispatches. The officer to the scene and the dog from the scene.
Yeah, maybe that's not like the thing we should be focusing on.
No, but it's a dumb word. Who wrote that?
I don't know.
Steve does because he's holding it.
The police department did. That was the words from the police department.
Oh, really?
Enfield police said the officer, quote, dispatched the dog.
That's weird.
On the other hand, I'm also intrigued by the fact that they had to say Enfield, Connecticut.
They always do.
I know. But Enfield, Massachusetts, it doesn't even really exist anymore since it's at the bottom of the Quabbin.
That's 22 doing that.
Yeah. But they all do it. I mean, I think Western Mass News does it. I think even Mass Live does it. Another world.
Yeah, it's not like after the attack was over, the officer said, Officer Pitbull, we have a serious situation going on three streets over. You want to get your assistance?
Yeah, we have a situation in a foreign land known as Enfield, Connecticut.
Thank you for saying Connecticut. I would have went to the wrong Enfield.
Yeah, I would have went to the Quabbin and started swimming.
You would have taken your snorkel equipment, mm-hmm. gone down to the bottom to see if you could find something.
East Longmeadow is being audited by the state's education department after not bringing students into the classroom despite the state's request. 22 News had obtained a copy of the DESE's letter informing the East Longmeadow School Committee of the audit. In it, the state says they'll review whether they are adhering to the state and federal regulations. They say they are concerned with the district's plan to remain fully remote until after the new year due to the community health data. Last month, East Longmeadow was one of 16 school districts told to adjust their reopening plan.
You know, as someone who has children in the East Longmeadow school system.
How many do you have?
I have three children.
Wentz.
One still remains in the East Lawn Middle School system.
I never knew that about him, John.
Three daughters, yeah. Two in college, one in high school. Imagine that. I've only been talking about it for 20 years.
I've never heard you say mention it once.
No, yeah, I know. You said it before, Steve. But I have
no problem with them continuing to learn at home until after the first of the year. In fact, I would prefer it.
Why? Why the first of the year?
At the very least, the first of the year. It may go all the entire year, for all I know. I'm just saying that to rush everybody back into the school at this point, I think is disruptive. And they've already had enough disruption. And it may not be safe to have all those kids back in school.
It's weird. My kids finally went back this week.
You have kids too, Steve?
Can you believe that?
Oh my God, I've got to pay more attention.
I know. It's weird. It's a very weird, like, you know, the pickup and drop-off thing.
Yep.
I haven't done the drop-off, but the pickup, very different than it used to be.
And how do your kids handle the transition from being at home to suddenly being in class?
Here's the thing. They don't seem to mind any of this.
They're adaptable.
Well, yeah,
they are adaptable, but
they're seeing their friends.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's no like I would be if I was a kid, you know, thinking about being a kid again and having a mask on all day, that would bother the hell out of me. But it doesn't really seem to bother them that much.
Yeah.
But you're thinking about being a kid with an adult mentality,
right? Kids don't seem to really care about what's going on.
When I was a kid, I kind of liked adult things like, you know, finding a dirty magazine in my father's sock drawer, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but now that I'm an adult, I don't really care for kid things or kids.
Which dirty magazine was it?
Oh, it was I believe it was Swank.
Swank. Man, your dad had some taste, didn't he?
He did. He was very sophisticated in his choices.
Well, my mom only needed the... Oh, damn it. What was it? What was it that George got caught with?
It was a glamour.
Glamour, yeah. That was the best I could do.
Hey, I used to do the JCPenney wish book.
That was a good
one. The lingerie section in
there.
That
was a good one.
Bam!
You betcha.
Bam!
Sometimes you get those issues of National Geographic.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you see, like, suddenly something tribal and topless.
Yeah, we used to, I remember being in sixth grade, going to the library, and some kid always pulled out one of those National Geographic magazines to show the native people of whatever tribe they were featuring in that magazine.
And they were always topless.
They were all naked.
Oh, man, we have come a long way from all that to all of these step family situations.
Yeah, nobody, I know, nobody is going on Pornhub going... tribal porn.
right. Yeah. And nobody looked to National Geographic for stepmother porn.
Yeah, speak for yourself. I still do it.
Tribal porn?
You're damn right.
National Geo Hot Lady.
That's what I'm talking about.
The Mass Department of Secondary and Elementary Education released their snow day guidelines, giving school districts the option to go remote for snow days or not. Meaning snow days, as many people remember, no work, sledding all day, and all that stuff may be over. When one local college student remembers the snow days of his childhood fondly. When I was in high school, I definitely loved those days and just waiting for the school cancellation or delay. Now they're going to make these kids go to school no matter what.
Yeah, well, but the kids loved the snow day to be able to go outside and play in the snow, but didn't necessarily like the fact that they had to stay an extra day in the summer at the end of the year. But one of the things, I was reading this article earlier this morning, and one of the things that is a good point is, yes, the elimination of the snow day is a good idea. That way you don't have to make up for it at the end of the year. But the difference is, that if the snowstorm knocks out the power and knocks out the internet, then it knocks out the learning at home process.
Well, that's already happened.
Yeah. That's happened several times with the power outages a couple of weeks ago.
It happened.
The storm.
Yeah, it happened right here in town. My kids had a half a day. Like, what do you mean you have it a half a day? And then, you know, there's no internet to hook up to. And then, you know, and then you had the Springfield schools shut down because of some sort of breach of security. It's like, hey, listen, that's almost a snow day right there.
You know, I think if you can have remote learning at home, then you should be able to prepare some kind of a curriculum that a kid can do in the event that it does snow and it does knock out the power.
Yeah.
So that just because you don't have that connection, you don't have a school day.
Yeah, they tried that with those blizzard bag things, and then they outlawed them.
No, I realize that. But, I mean, if there was, you know, some kind of a, I don't know, some kind of an online, just an email.
Some schools will provide a packet for kids of work, but they're not necessarily work that is dedicated for, you know, what you're talking about. But it certainly could be. You could certainly email a PDF of work to a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, have them, you know, do the work if it's going to be a couple days without power, as long as you don't need the internet to do it.
Mm-hmm.
A dominatrix took a man on a leash into a fancy grocery store in Los Angeles on Saturday. They were both wearing masks. She had a standard medical face mask, and he was wearing a dog mask with a chain attached. She bought an overpriced smoothie, then took the man out onto the patio and fed him out of a dog bowl while she whipped him. At that point, security asked them to leave.
Really?
Yeah.
Based on what?
After all of that, it was the dog eating out of the dog bowl that required security to say, all right, enough of this. Somebody in on a leash.
There's really nothing illegal to that. I mean, you think about those people who had those little things that they attached to their belts and then put it on a kid's wrist so that the kid could never wander off too far away. It's basically the same thing for adults.
Yeah, because you don't want your submissive to get lost.
Exactly.
Right. But on the other hand, he wasn't like eating like a dog with like 10 other people around him, which would be non-compliant.
No, he was socially distanced.
Socially distant and compliant. I don't see the problem.
Yes.
I'm not sure under what grounds they were both dressed, right?
Yeah, maybe he had an accident on the rug.
She probably had to rub his nose in it.
That's what I'm saying, and that's why they kicked him out.
You're not supposed to scoot in a nice restaurant.
It's itchy down there.
I know, but I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
It's also just a grocery store, though, not even a restaurant. I don't see the problem here.
You remember yesterday when we were talking about that the idea of spending 2 weeks in quarantine with your family just to have Thanksgiving dinner at some timeshare?
You think I've been able to forget that in 24 hours?
I think you're not going to be able to forget this, because I think this would be something you'd be interested in. Hotels.com is offering someone the chance to rent Friendsgiving Island to help your crew keep your distance from other people the week before Thanksgiving. It's a 3-bedroom house on a private island off the coast of Florida, and it's only $300 per night. So you could go there and be by yourself. You don't have to go with other people.
$300 a night's actually pretty reasonable.
Are there accommodations or things on this island?
There is a. It's just a house. You're renting a house.
But it's a full house with electricity and running water and.
Yes.
It's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea at all.
Of course not.
I like that. How long?
3 days for the Thanksgiving weekend.
3 days.
Yeah.
So you can bring all the stuff with you that you need in bags and stuff. How are you getting to the island?
You have to take a little boat to get there.
Okay.
Like a personal boat.
They're giving me the transportation, the boat back and forth?
It comes with the house. Yeah.
$300, it's not bad.
It's not bad at all. Normally, this would cost $1,400 per night, but they're offering it for $300 for the week.
That's practically giving it away.
$1,400 a night?
Yeah, you should see this place. It's a really fancy, like, Florida-style home on this private island.
What's it called? What's this?
This is from UPI. Friendsgiving Island. If you Googled that, I'm sure it would come up. It's a story on UPI.
Giving Island. Yeah, $1,400. I can't imagine that.
Mm.
Oh, well, you know what? It's not like it's a home in the middle of an island. It appears as though the island is only slightly larger than the home itself.
Yeah, I couldn't really describe that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're the kind of person that's looking to get away, this is really getting away.
And there's a dock and an outdoor, first of all, there's an in-ground pool. There's also what looks to be like an outdoor changing house. Yeah. 5,000 square foot home, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, veranda. Oh, I like the veranda.
Solarium.
Boat deck. Another veranda.
Veranda. Isn't that the lady that had the fruit in her head?
Oh, no. You're thinking of Carmen Miranda. That's the thing that the police read you when they're arresting you.
No. That's the Miranda rights.
Miranda warning. Yeah. A helicopter pad. Also, boat, kayak, paddle boards. No helicopter, however.
Yeah. You know what? For $300, that's a great deal.
It is a great deal. Oh, man.
You should think about this. You know, you want to stay in the villages. There's thousands of people around the villages. You don't want to be around people. This is perfect for you.
You can also stay in a $5 a night man-made cave in New Mexico.
How far away are you from actual civilization? Like a grocery store or a liquor store?
Well, you're going to have to bring all that stuff with you when you go there the first time. I mean, I don't see anything here that would allow you to look it up even on Google Earth to see how far it is from the land. But you're only going for 3 days, so you bring enough booze and food to last you 3 days.
I know, but some people underestimate what they need. That's all I'm saying. And if you finish all your booze in 2 days, you got 1 day left to go. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Start swimming.
If you brought 2 giant bottles of vodka with you, I think you'd be okay.
Man, what a lightweight this guy turned out to be.
If it's just one of you.
Yeah, right. Sure.
You know, how much liquor can you drink?
I don't know. That's part of the challenge of it all. Saving almost 1,100 hours on this house.
Maybe that pool is full of gin.
Will be by the time I get with it.
McDonald's is notorious for having its ice cream machines break down. It happens so much that their official Twitter account even make jokes about it now. But the people who run McDonald's franchises don't see it as a joke because they're losing money when people can't buy ice cream from broken machines. So they've decided to take matters into their own hands. A bunch of independent franchise owners have formed a team to find new machines that don't break as often. And once they find a more reliable machine, they'll present it to McDonald's corporate to have it approved. That's not really... If you didn't do it yet, why is this even a story?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, these franchisees are unfortunately forced to take the equipment that the corporation tells them they have to get. And if these machines are continually breaking down and corporate is saying, well, we're not going to go out and find another machine because we don't want to have to spend more money, and then the franchisees take it upon themselves to go out and find a better machine, then I can understand that.
You know,
I know it's lucrative. But it just doesn't, I don't get how you make money on these franchises.
Well, you know, like we told you before, you don't make money on just owning one. You make money on owning a bunch.
But still, when you own a bunch, it means you got to do the same thing a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Look at all these McDonald's right now that are redesigning. You know, they're going into this gray-black look now. I just realized this yesterday, the one on Riverdale in West Springfield. They're all redesigning their looks after tearing down that one in Ludlow to rebuild it to look like the previous incarnation. Now McDonald's has changed the look of its buildings again. And as a franchisee, you are obligated to do that work and pay for it yourself.
You know,
and if you had 5 of them, it seems like it would be 5 times more aggravation.
You saw the movie The Founder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's ironic to me that, you know, Ray Kroc, when he was starting out, was trying to sell, you know, shake making machines. Mm-hmm. And he tried selling them to McDonald's, and, you know, they were off to, you know, their own business and their own way of doing things. Yeah. And that's the shakes and the ice cream that are the problem. I went there a couple years ago. My kids wanted Shamrock Shakes on the very first day that they were available. I went to one of these McDonald's and said, I want a Shamrock Shake, please, or you know, three medium Shamrock Shakes. And they said, our Shamrock Shake machine is broke.
Yeah.
It's your first day.
It's the same machine as the ice cream one.
It's the opening day festivities of the Shamrock Shake.
But the machine makes more than Shamrock Shakes, and it probably had been broken for days.
I know, but it's day one. You got a sign outside that says Shamrock Shake's now available. I had to explain that to three very disappointed children.
Yeah. They're going to have a whole lifetime of disappointment ahead of them.
No, I've made sure that happened.
Your Pioneer Valley forecast today, foggy this morning, then clearing by this afternoon, high of 70. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 73. It is 59 right now in downtown Springfield. I'm Steve Nagel, and that's the news on Rock 102. Aw, yeah.
In business, things move quickly. You have to be ready to shift, pivot, adapt,